Okay, I will call this meeting of the Tax Committee to order pursuant of Rule 10.01. The first order of business is to roll call. Ms. Jiska, please take the roll.
Ms. Lagarde.
Present.
Ms. Lagarde, present. Davids, excused. Abaje.
Present.
Abaje, present. Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Carlson, present. Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Detmer, present. Garofalo.
Garofalo, present.
Garofalo, present. Gomez.
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Her. Her. Hertas. Hertas.
Hertas here.
Hertas present. Howard.
Present.
Howard present. McDonald.
McDonald present.
McDonald present. Miller.
Miller present.
Miller present. Moran.
Moran present.
Moran present. Mortensen.
Mortensen present.
Mortensen present. Robbins.
Present.
Robbins present. Sundell.
Present.
Sundell present. Schultz.
Present.
Schultz present. Stevenson.
Present.
Stevenson present. Swazinski.
Present.
Swazinski present. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim present. Her.
Present.
Her present. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Jiska. I want to note that all the committee documents for today have been sent to members, and they are on the committee page of the House website. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of February 23rd. Representative Carlson, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, I have, Mr. Chair, and I move to approve the minutes.
Okay. Representative Carlson moves the minutes. Does anyone have any questions about these minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I do.
Representative Garofalo.
Well, thank you. Well, Representative Carlson said that he reviewed the minutes, and I just wanted to double check with Representative Carlson if the attendance listed in those meetings were correct since he reviewed them.
Mr. Carlson.
1 second.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought Representative Carlson had already reviewed the minutes. Okay, I reviewed them. They look fine to me. So perhaps I can make the motion if Representative Carlson was mistaken.
No, I'm just double-checking the attendance, Representative, if you want to wait. Otherwise, we can proceed.
I think we can proceed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you for checking and then double-checking and then clarifying that you checked. Does anyone else have any? If not, please, everyone, remove. And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does carry. Okay, the first bill on the agenda is House File 427 from Representative Waugamaw. Can I get a motion to move House File 427 before the committee?
So moved.
And who was that?
Old McDonald.
Oh, Representative McDonald moves. 427 before the committee. Representative Waugamaw, welcome to the committee, and please present your bill.
Mr. Chair, this is Nathan Jessen, committee administrator. I do not believe Representative Waugamaw is here yet.
Okay.
Both of his testifiers are here. I think we could either have another member present the bill or have Representative Noor. I believe Representative Noor is here. We can hear that bill first, okay. Perhaps.
Well, then what is the protocol since we have we moved it already? What is the protocol for that, Nathan?
Well, Representative Garofalo's raised his hand. You could lay it on the table would be my recommendation, to lay the bill on the table.
Okay. Representative Garofalo?
Well, Mr. Chairman, since Representative McDonald moved the bill, we can actually progress on the bill without having the chief author here. That's okay. He can just join the conversation later. That's standard practice for members who've been in the legislature and pay attention, but I know that you're new to this, so you're still kind of figuring it out. So maybe it's a good idea to have Representative Carlson run the meeting so we can stop with, you know, these delays and impediments. Maybe that might be a good idea, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Garofalo, for them words of wisdom. But
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Sorry, this is Nathan Jessen, Committee Administrator. Representative Wolgamott has joined the meeting, so we can proceed accordingly.
Okay, wonderful. Do you have another question, Mr. Representative Garofalo?
I have statements, but no questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. We'll get back to you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Wolgamott, can you please present your bill?
All right, thank you very much, Vice Chair Listigard and members of the Tax Committee. I'm here to present House File 427, which would be a repealing of the June accelerated sales tax for certain construction industry companies. I have with me a constituent of mine, Mr. John Peterson, who's here to testify on the bill.
Okay, Mr. Peterson, please welcome to the committee and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. My name is John Peterson. I'm with TCC Materials. I also have, we also have Keith Meyer with Semstone Companies, who will be testifying after my statements. TCC Materials is a packaging manufacturing. We have a couple facilities in the state of Minnesota, in Medford and in St. Paul and in Rosemount. And we primarily manufactured cement-based products, landscape rock, anything, those types of products we put in various sizes of bags and supply, you know, to the construction industry. And we have a situation with this June accelerated sales tax that's a very serious hardship, and we're very grateful for Representative Wolgamott's persistence on this topic. We've been working on this for sure 3 years now, as our company is individually going on four. It's a topic that many of you on your tax committee have probably heard about in the past, but much broader scenario or view. And we're asking you to simply exempt some construction materials suppliers because we have significant hardships in the way that we do business and have to operate. We've had other authors in the past. I want to thank Representative Brand, Representative Lilsligard, David Davids, and Tapke. Some are here, some aren't. Have worked on this issue in the past, and I understand the challenges for getting co-authors with bills with the situation that we're in now and the virtual meeting process that you're working through. But how this works is that the state of Minnesota asks businesses to collect the sales tax for the Department of Revenue. And we're happy to do that. We collect the money, and oftentimes when a community adds a new sales tax, they add a half cent sales tax that's specific to a community. Many times it's us as building materials suppliers are educating our customer on which communities have added which taxes and how much they've gone up. And we are put in a position to educate them sometimes because of the new local sales taxes that get added on. But we collect that sales tax and we report it. And then of course we pay it. And this early payment that we go through in June that the CFO from Semstone is going to talk about in a few minutes creates a significant hardship. And the main reason why is that we are not like a typical retail store, like a Target or a Walmart or a liquor store, for example, where when you are a car dealer, when we walk out of those stores, that company, that store, that building or a company owner has the money in their cash register in their pocket, or if a credit card is used, they're going to have that money in within a few days into their bank account. What's different about our businesses is that we have to offer terms, and we don't get paid for many days afterwards. So building material suppliers are literally financing the start of construction projects because we provide product, many, many, many days before to get the project started, before we get paid for that material or for that service that we've provided. And so Keith Meyer, the CFO of Semstone Companies, has some comments more specifically and about actual dollar amounts and how it affects, the Semstone organization. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Peterson, and welcome, Mr. Meyer. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much for allowing us to speak. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Awesome. Thank you. My name is Keith Meyer. I am the Chief Financial Officer of Semstone Products Companies. And again, thank you for your time this afternoon and allowing us to talk about this. We really appreciate it. And consider this onerous issue of the June early sales tax payment on building material suppliers to be a big deal for our business. Semstone Products Company is a Minnesota family-owned business that started in 1927. So our company's 100-year anniversary is coming up in 6 years, which we're pretty proud of. Fortunately, I've not been around that long. We are primarily a ready-mix concrete supplier. We also have aggregate mines, concrete pumping, and Semstone supply stores. This early tax payment, as John has said, is a significant burden for building material suppliers in Minnesota. There are three points that I'd like to highlight regarding the difficulty of this law on material supplier businesses. Because Minnesota has harder winters and longer winters, the spring is when we are ramping up our businesses for the late spring, summer, and fall selling seasons. We are bringing back people, we are building inventories at all of our stores, we are filling up all the silos and plants with aggregate, cement, and other materials that will be used in our processes, and we are buying new equipment. In short, we are spending a lot of money during this time. Secondly, our customers are doing the same thing, as John said, that we are doing during that time. They are buying inventories, they are bringing people back, they are buying equipment, etc. Because of this spring spending, it creates a very tight cash position for all these building material companies. Consequently, they are stretching out paying their suppliers and contractors. We have a tracking mechanism and we track the time from when we sell a product to when a customer pays us for that product. Our standard terms that are on our invoices to our customers are 30 days. So we're giving our customers 30 days to pay for the products that they are buying for us. In the March through June timeframe, the average days that a customer takes to pay us is 55 to 65 days. So double or sometimes more than double what our allowable terms are. How the sales tax works normally is in any given month of the year, is that for that given month's sales, we remit the sales tax to the state by the 20th of the following month. So all the sales tax charged on sales in May, for instance, would be paid to the state on June 20th, whether collected or not, to John's point. How the June accelerated tax payment works is basically to take 81% of your May or June tax liability and remit that to the state on June 28th. So we have just remitted the May payment on June 20th, and now on June 28th, we are remitting the estimated June liability or 81% of it to the state. Because our average days pay in May and June are so slow, we are having to borrow this money to make that accelerated payment. Does that make sense? Yeah, that is the end of my prepared statement.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Now we're open up to member questions for the testifiers or Representative Wagama. And I see we have Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Wolgamont, I assume that the reason why you're not doing a full repeal of the June accelerated sales tax is just because of the cost involved. Is that a fair statement?
Representative Wolgamont.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, that is correct.
Okay. And just Mr. Chairman and members, just so people are aware, a full repeal of the June accelerated sales tax would have a one-time cost in the general fund of about $320 million. So that's why, obviously we can, I strongly support doing the June accelerated sales tax, especially now, but that's why we're only seeing this limited one. But if I could offer a suggestion to Representative Wolgamont and to members of the committee, and that is that from the state's budget savings perspective, it only really matters in the odd number of a fiscal year. So when that revenue is accelerated from fiscal year 22 to fiscal year 21, that's really the only time that it's relevant for the state. If we were to repeal the June accelerated sales tax in the end of a even numbered year, so the next fiscal year, there would be no biennial impact on the state's finances because we have a 24-month calendar, fiscal calendar. So if you were to do a full June accelerated sales tax repeal for the end of fiscal year 22, there'd be no impact to the state's general fund, but you would probably have to let it blink back on in fiscal year 23 for the second year. Given the state's cash flow position right now, it would seem that we could, as a response to COVID and what's going on right now, that we could temporarily suspend the June accelerated sales tax for the end of fiscal year 21 and 22, recognizing that in all likelihood it would turn back on in fiscal year 23. But just given the financial pressures that businesses are facing right now, and given the fact that the state actually does have quite, the state government actually has plenty of money sitting around, and tomorrow it's going to be announced that we got a lot more. In light of that, I would just encourage you, Representative Wolgamont, and members of the DFL majority to look at that, to just suspend the June accelerated sales tax for fiscal years 21 as well as 22. You're going to provide the relief to the people we're hearing from today, as well as a lot of businesses across Minnesota, and there would be no impact on the general fund for the next biennium. So just I would just ask you to please consider that. And to the testifier, John Peterson, what a coincidence. I used to know a very powerful senator from the St. Cloud area named John Peterson, and you kind of look like him too. So it's what a strange series of coincidences. So Representative Wolgamont, please take my advice under consideration for that. It's a very simple way to help out not only the people we're hearing from today, but all the businesses in Minnesota. And it would cause no financial pressure whatsoever for the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Is there any other questions for the testifiers or Representative Wagama? Okay, seeing none. Just a remind, did somebody else?
Oh, Mr. Chair, if I could just have some closing.
Representative Wagama. And members, just so it's on record that the revenue estimate shows 13.3 million cost this biennium. And with that, Representative Wagama, any closing comments?
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Well, just to summarize what you've all heard this afternoon, members, this bill simply asks you to support exempting construction material suppliers from having to pay their sales tax early and eliminate this hardship that's created by a revenue system. My testifier said it best, but just to recap, construction material suppliers are particularly harmed by this requirement for four reasons. They've got a really short building season. They're forced to borrow money to be able to make this payment. And they have to offer terms so they don't get paid for 30, 60, 90 days sometimes for a job. And they're at a disadvantage because other bigger businesses like Target, Walmart, Best Buy, car dealers will get paid before their customers leave the store. So they've got the money to make a sales tax payment to the state, whereas these construction material suppliers haven't been paid yet and they don't have the money to make the payment. So I just really want to reiterate this to every single member. This is not a tax break. these building material suppliers just want to be exempt from having to make the payment early. And my sense, Mr. Chair and members, is that many of your districts have building material suppliers, just like from the ones that you've heard of from my community. This is an undue hardship that is being caused to your constituents by state law. So my ask, Mr. Chair and members, is for you to help us fix it. And I'm, you know, Representative Garofalo, appreciate your suggestion there. More than willing to talk with my constituent and other construction material suppliers and other members to work on that. But again, let's put an end to this undue hardship and let's get this bill over the finish line. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, and thank you especially to the business owners from my community who came to testify today. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Representative Wagama. And Representative McDonald renews his motion that House File 427 be laid over for possible inclusion, and the bill is laid over. Now it is my pleasure to hand the gavel back to Chair Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Representative Leslegard, for chairing the meeting up to this point. Next on the agenda, we have House File 298, Collegiate Ticket Purchasing Rights Tax Exemption Provided. And we have Representative Knorr here. And Representative Knorr, welcome to the committee. Would someone like to move House File 298?
I'll move House File 298.
Representative Carlson moves House File 298 be laid over for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. And Representative Knorr, welcome to the committee. And I know you have a DE1 amendment. So let's put that on and then we can go from there. So Representative Carlson moves the DE1 amendment. Representative Knorr, any comments on that, or is just to put the bill into its proper form? Representative Knorr.
That's correct, Mr. Chair and members. The DE1 puts the bill in the shape and form that I'd like to present.
Very good. Any questions, members? If not, I'm going to vote on the Carlson Amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Temporary. Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Knorr, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members again. Just to give you my orientation, I represent District 60D. That is the neighborhood surrounding the University of Minnesota. So I'm honored to represent that district. Mr. Chair and members, the bill before you, House File 298, will exclude from taxes the extra amount paid as part of scholarship sitting donation program when securing season tickets for a college athletic event. The reason why we're presenting this bill to you today is because the Department of Revenue notified the University of Minnesota in 2017 that they interpreted the law that exists today that the sales tax are due or they're required to be paid for the scholarship tickets. The resources collected by the university's scholarship sitting donations are used to provide scholarships to university athletes, as well as provide for costs associated with wellness and academic programs for these students. The resources are not used for general funding in athletics or the university overall. Mr. Chair and members, the university scholarship sitting program is similar to the programs that have been standard across the board at schools throughout the country for many years, particularly those in peer conferences such as Big Ten, Pac-12, Big 12, SEC, and ACC. This program spared requested donations with season ticket purchases to provide essential revenue to athletic departments, especially departments like the University of Minnesota that are responsible for generating a significant amount of operating revenue independent of the greater university. Mr. Chair and members of the university's Twin Cities campus, the scholarship sitting program includes select season tickets for 5 golfer sports: football, men's and women's basketball, men's hockey and volleyball. At the Duluth campus, the program includes tickets for Bulldog men's hockey and football, with plans to expand to women's hockey in the next few years. When choosing their season tickets, fans have the option to choose seats in various zones. depending on the spot. Each zone reflects a different donation level tied to purchasing seats in that area of the venue. Depending on the spot and zone, scholarship seating contributions can be as little as $50 per seat. Fans also have the option of selecting season tickets for these spots that have no scholarship seating donation attached to them. Scholarship seating contributes, creates a complete collegiate experience for student athletes by helping the athletic department pay their students' athlete scholarship cost, tuition, fees, books, and room and board. With over 1,100 student athletes on the Twin Cities and Duluth campuses, this program has collected approximately $12 million through scholarship seating to help with student athletes' expenses. The sales tax on 11 or 12 million in scholarship seating contribution is approximately 1.1 million in state and local taxes. That is enough for us to fund approximately 30 to 35 scholarships for in-state students, young women and men who grow up in Minnesota, dreaming about competing for University of Minnesota. Members, Minnesota is the only state that we are aware of nationwide where scholarship seating donation programs are subject to sales tax. Mr. Chair and members, in 2017, the state legislature and the governor provided a similar exemption to seat licenses at the Minnesota Vikings Stadium, a professional franchise. I believe it's appropriate for the state to grant similar exemptions for collegiate athletes, particularly when the proceeds are going to help the student who need it. Again, Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity for me to present this bill before you and for your consideration of this legislation. I would like to turn over right now to Quincy Lewis, a former University of Minnesota student athlete, to talk about the importance of this bill. With that, I stand ready to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Noor. I do see two members have questions. What I'd like to do is go to this testifier, and then we'll open it up to questions, if that's all right. I see Representative Miller nodding his head, so let's do that. So, Quincy Lewis, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Quincy Lewis, Chair Noor Court. Ranking members, David, members of the committee. My name is Quincy Lewis, and I'm here speaking to you because of my love for the university and also this state that I call home. After my career as a professional basketball player, I returned to work at the university because I wanted to share my experience, my professional experience, and also my time here in Minnesota with the next generation of Gophers, so that they could have a better experience than I had. I wanted to share with them my CFAMS experience in the classroom, where I balanced the metro campus with the needs of agriculture in rural Minnesota, my success on the basketball court, winning championships, my special opportunity to be a part of the 1996 Olympics when it came through Minneapolis, my experience of winning a gold medal in the Goodwill Games in New York, being drafted, playing in three countries in Europe, but also my experience of coming back after I was done playing and get my master's from the University of Minnesota. And then coming back and really working at a place that I love. None of this would have been possible without the resources and the systems at the university. But it was the idea of a scholarship that really allowed me to dream bigger than Little Rock, Arkansas. I think about what if. What if we reduced the access to scholarships? Scholarships are the dreams that fuel the university. It's the scholarships that, for many, including myself, for a better future for people. We all want a strong university. We all want a strong state. Scholarships are a lifeline at the university. They connect us, they empower us, and they give dreamers like me an opportunity who want more. And athletics, scholarship seating program, it brings equity to athletics. It brings a balance between the revenue and the non-revenue sports. It balances between men and women's sports. It provides professional opportunities between the WNBA, NBA, NHL, NFL, and our Olympic sports. It brings a balance of resources from scholarship players like me and many of my friends who are walk-ons. But also, it eliminates food deserts within programs. This legislation is very important because it provides all these opportunities for all of our student athletes. What if a grandson, a granddaughter, a niece and nephew wanted to play sports in college? What would your advice be to them? It probably would be something as simple as, if you work hard in school and you work hard in your sport, you could get a scholarship. Today, I'm asking for help to make sure that our state, Minnesota, and the university system, not just the twin system, but our system, can live this promise that if our young kids work hard in the classroom and hard in their sport, that they will have an opportunity at a scholarship. There's no better story than a kid growing up in the walking distance of a U that can hear the sounds of the football games, that dream to be a Gopher and going to win a Super Bowl, like Tyler Johnson from North Minneapolis, or a woman soccer player that grew up in Plymouth who now plays for the Gophers. And the reason why I bring these two is because why? Scholarships are the bridge between dreams and reality. Thank you this morning, and I appreciate your support of my university and the Golden Gophers and also Duluth as well.
Mr. Lewis, thank you so much for your testimony. And there are other University of Minnesota officials who are on here to answer questions if need be. So I'll go to members' questions. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Knorr. I need to get on the same page, and then I have a couple really quick questions. This will all be quick, I promise, Mr. Chair, but I'm hearing terminology that I'm trying to wrap my mind around what this is. So I want to be clear. What I hear this is that there is stadium seat license fees. And in Minnesota, so like that happens in a lot of sports, especially in pro sports. You pay a fee. If you want to get season tickets, you not only pay for the season tickets, but you pay, if you will, for the right to have that seat for your season ticket. It's sort of a way to generate revenue that's been really popularized in a lot of sports. So what I'm hearing you say is it's one of those license fees, and that license fee has a sales tax attached to it right now in Minnesota. Do I hear that right?
So Representative Knorr, we could go to Mr. Klayman also. Representative Knorr.
Thank you. We can go to the University of Minnesota officials, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So who would like to answer that question?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. Please state your name, please.
I'm Heather Broniak, and I'm an assistant tax director in the tax management office at the University of Minnesota. Representative Miller, the scholarship seating donations are very similar to the license payments in the pro stadiums, but they are a little different in that those license to use a suite is generally a property right, and it can be sold to someone else, and it's often a one-time charge, and the exemption that covers those license fees is really geared toward those pro team setups. The scholarship seating donation is a payment that is for the right to purchase tickets in a preferred viewing location.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to make, thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, absolutely. Thank you, Heather. I don't have your last name in front of me, so
we go further, Heather, would you spell your last name for the record, please, so we have it?
Mr. Chair, it's Heather Broniak, Broniak.
Thank you very much. All right, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Broniak. And I'm not necessarily against this. I just wanted to know that I was talking about the same thing, and I think you answered that very clearly. The question that I have then is, is typically when someone makes a purchase of some sort that includes a sales tax, they also pay that sales tax. And so I would assume that it would be similar in this case. And I'm not sure who wants to answer this, Mr. Chair, but is it your estimation that people are not buying these licenses because of the sales tax? Or is it affecting the market rate that you can have these scholarship seating? I don't remember what you call it, but these licenses. I mean, is the sales tax being a hindrance on the sales of these stadium seat licenses?
Well, I'll start with Ms. Broniak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, generally, when someone's making a scholarship seating donation, they're giving a set amount. And so we back into the sales tax on that. We don't say, you know, give us $5,000 plus sales tax. So because we back into it, that just lowers the revenue. And of course, with this being over $1 million in sales tax on the contributions, that's all that money that can't be spent on scholarships.
One more question,
Representative
Mr. Chair.
Miller, take your time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just the one final. So then my understanding would be is that when someone makes this scholarship contribution, it is, if you will, a nonprofit contribution. And so the person who donates for this scholarship license, that is considered a nonprofit contribution. So if I get $5,000 for a seat, can I personally write that off as a contribution?
Mr. Clayman, would that be considered a contribution and able for deductions?
I would hope so, but I'm just curious.
Yep. Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Miller, you know, provided that those contributions are being made under the rules of Section 172 of the Internal Revenue Code, they could be deducted as a charitable contribution. However, there are, we have to look into this a little bit because there are also what are called quid pro quo rules under Section 172, which can sometimes limit that deduction. But we need a little bit of time to figure that out.
I'm just, Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to figure out the financial structure of this. Like I said, this is sort of new to me, and I just want to know where the money's going or how it's looking. I don't have any further questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Miller. Good questions. And just since Ms. Broniak brought this up, the revenue estimate on this is $930,000 in 22, and then 940 in 23, and then going up $10,000 each year. So 930,000, 940,000 this biennium. Representative Garofalo.
First of all, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I wish someone would have told me that Quincy Lewis was going to be on this call today. He's one of the all-time best Gopher basketball players of all time. And so it's just, it's great to see him here. A lot of positive memories from his time playing with the Gophers and then his successful professional career. So, Mr. Lewis, thanks for being here and helping support the cause. This is a really good bill, Mr. Chairman. I thought that we had taken care of this last year. And maybe I'm confusing it with another collegiate bill. Can nonpartisan staff or can the author clarify what happened to this bill last year?
Representative Garofalo, we have heard the bill before. It has not been included in an omnibus bill.
Okay. All right. So, okay. Well, I just want to thank the author for bringing this forward. It's a good bill, and it would hopefully this is something that you can include in your omnibus bill later. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Sandell, you had your hand up at one time. Are you still in line?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just pass. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, yes, this looks like it's a good bill. I have a couple questions. What sports are we talking about? Are we talking about all sports at the University of Minnesota? And are we under the NCAA rules regarding this? And would these funds then go towards all sports? Both men and women.
Very good. So who would like to answer that? Where would these funds go? Do they go to all sports at the University of Minnesota or certain sports?
guess I can start.
Mr. Lewis.
So, and then Tim McCleary, he's also on as our CFO. So right now, ticket events, so it is football, men's and women's basketball, hockey are the ones, but mainly most of our ticketed sports have the opportunity to have this. And right now, by law, that this revenue only goes to scholarships or the add-ons that they had on the day, which are academic and nutrition. Tim, did I get that right?
Yeah, and I'll just
Mr. McCleary, please identify yourself, please.
Yeah, I apologize. Tim McCleary, so I'm the CFO for the athletic department, and I really appreciate the opportunity to hear that you guys are hearing this matter today. So, yeah, the sports that were identified where the SSD revenue is generated is football, men's and women's basketball, men's hockey, and volleyball. But that revenue is used for all sports, for scholarships for all sports.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I know being a wrestling coach myself for many years, and so same with the chair, Marquardt, I know the University of Minnesota over the past 15 years have drawn some big crowds and have held the Big Tens, and we also have held the NCAAs. Hopefully we'll get it back because we didn't get it last year. But wouldn't wrestling qualify for this too?
Mr. Lewis.
Yes.
Mr. McCleary.
There is some seating that holds donation levels for wrestling.
Okay.
And I can clarify.
Mr. McCleary.
So wrestling would have the opportunity to generate this revenue through their events, but wrestling student athletes, they receive, so we use the SSD revenue from the sports that generate it for all of the student athletes for all sports. So that's correct that wrestling student athletes benefit from SSD revenue that's generated by football or basketball or any of the other sports that generate it. Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And thank you, Mr. McCleary. Yeah, I just didn't hear the sport of wrestling mentioned earlier in the testimony that, I got to stick up for that sport of wrestling, you know, so, appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Swiecinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, this goes back to that charitable contribution conversation that happened with Mr. Clavin. Isn't it you only can claim as a deduction, like if you're essentially trading a good, so let's say it went to a silent auction for sports, like, and there's memorabilia, like a Vikings banner or a picture of a sporting person, and you bid on that, you'd only be able to deduct the value beyond the expected real value. So say if it had an expected real value of $90, you'd only really be able to deduct the value that you bid past real value, if I'm correct.
Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Swiecinski, I would need to look at the Section 172 rules on that to be sure. I want to make sure I give you a right answer on that. I can make one clarifying comment. House Fiscal did dig up that in the 2019 tax bill in federal conformity that did disallow the deduction for the college athletic athletic seating payments in the year 2019. So presumably those were eligible for the charitable deduction contribution.
Thank you, Mr. Clayman. Representative Swiecinski.
And just a final comment. I mean, from my previous conversations with former Chair Detmer, I really didn't think wrestling was a sport, but more of a life.
Well put, Representative Swiecinski. I'm glad you added that last part on there. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hate to be the bummer in the room and with everybody having a good time talking about their support for this bill. I guess I just wanted to say that to me, this is one of the kinds of tax expenditures that justifies the creation of our tax expenditure commission that we're working on together this year. And, you know, in particular, actually, the stadium suite exemption that Representative Neuer referenced in his testimony, I think is really one of those expenditures that won't meet the test once we get into it of what's the legislative intent. And if you compare the effectiveness of the tax expenditure to a direct appropriation based on the outcome, when you check it against the legislative intent, that it won't meet that test. And so, Representative Neuer, I appreciate what you're doing here. And you know, I guess I just didn't want it to go past without remarking on that. So thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Marker. I'll be quick, and I'm kind of in the same place Representative Gomez is as well. I just, and maybe I missed this, and my apologies if I did, but I just want to understand that this is going to go to the scholarship fund, and this is for the athlete scholarship fund. Is that correct? So it funds the athletes who actually get scholarships to come to the U. Is that correct?
Representative Knorr, did you want to answer that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's correct, Representative Herr.
And so I guess
Representative Herr.
Chair Marquardt, I guess that leads me to my question of like scholarship. And this is nothing against the scholarships for athletes. I actually will have an athlete at the U this fall. She's going to be a diver at the University of Minnesota. And I'm really proud of that. But I also know that scholarships are given, it's not needs based. So I guess I would just like to understand who benefits specifically from the scholarship fund, because again, I would love to see the breakout of the athletes who actually would, short of having funds to go there, they wouldn't be able to, versus those who get a scholarship but not necessarily would need it. And so I'm just curious as to who specifically benefits.
So the revenue estimate is $930,000. That is going to be dollars that the University of Minnesota would not have otherwise. So Representative Herr's question is, they have that $930,000, who specifically would benefit from that as far as the student athletes. Is that right, Representative Herr?
Actually, just to be really clear specifically, I mean, I want to know that when we give these types of breaks, that it actually goes to people, let's say students, maybe athletes who, are from low income families, or they're from, or they're first generations to go, or I would like to know the demographics of those who get the benefit from this, because again, we don't need to give benefits to people who actually don't need it to go to college.
Very good. Who would like to address that, Mr. Lewis or Mr. McCleary? Mr. McCleary.
Ms. McCleary, yes.
Yeah, and Quincy, if you want to add. I think we're talking specifically about the $936,000 estimate. Currently, if the tax law was changed, that would be part of our total SSD revenue that then we would use to allocate to scholarships for all of our student athletes. It's not necessarily tied to certain student athletes currently, like our endowments are, but we would be open to the, to the will of the legislature if there were an interest in tying it to certain student athletes, whether it's where they're from or their economic background, those types of things.
Thank you. Representative Herr.
That's it, Jim Marquardt. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else care to ask questions or testify on House File 298 as amended? Representative Detmer.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I think the NCAA has something to do with the amount of scholarships available for each sport. I think that varies from sport to sport, activity to activity. And so I know the U has to. I know right now, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Cleary, the university doesn't get any state money for scholarships. It's all generated within the athletic programs itself. That's my understanding. I could be wrong, but I know each sport has their own number of scholarships that are set up by the NCAA.
Mr. McCleary, is that correct?
Representatives, it's correct that the NCAA has limits on each sport in terms of the number of scholarships that can be awarded for each sport. And to fund our scholarships, it primarily comes from the scholarship seating donation revenue. If we do not have enough scholarship seating donation revenue to cover the scholarships in a given year than we would use operating funds generated by the athletic department.
Yeah. Anything further, Representative Detmer?
No, that's what I understood. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Representative Knorr, closing thoughts.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chen, members, for allowing me to present this bill. This is about the students. This is about my constituents who are residing in my district, and also your constituents, your students. So given that this is the standard in many places across the country, so I would like us to consider allowing the exemption for the scholarship seating program. So that we can support the students. And I've heard that the University of Minnesota is open to allowing this program to be more targeted. So I welcome that idea and I support going forward. So I'd like to ask for your support. Thank you, Mr. Chen, members.
Thank you very much, Representative Knorr. Representative Carlson renews his motion to lay over House File 298 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you all. Thank you all to the testifiers. Moving to the next bill, House File 975, we have Representative Igel here, Grand Rapids Civic Center Construction Refundable Exemption provided. Would someone like to move House File 975?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Les Legarde moves House File 975 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Representative Igel, welcome to the committee, your first time before the tax committee. Welcome. And if you would please begin your testimony, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for having me. So House File 975 is, like you said, a tax exemption bill for the Grand Rapids Civic Center. So in my hometown of Grand Rapids, we have a large civic center that not only hosts hockey, but many other various activities and serves as the convention center for a good part of our region there in the Northland. So I won't go into it too much. I've brought two testifiers with me, our city administrator, Tom Pagel, and then a council member, Rick Blake. So I'll hand it over to them to present this project.
Very good. So we'll start with Tom Pagel. If you would please introduce yourself and begin your testimony. Welcome.
Chair Marquardt and the rest of the committee. My video is currently not working, but I'm asking if my audio is working.
We are hearing you loud and clear.
Thank you very much. The improvements we're looking at is the replacement of our truss and roof on our west venue, along with the replacement of refrigeration, major ADA improvements, including the installation of a elevator, along with HVAC improvements that are dating back to the 1960s. From a regional impact perspective, Councilmember Blake will talk about this.
Very good. Councilmember Blake, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
My name is Rick Blake. I'm a city councilor in Grand Rapids and also a former high school wrestler. Does that count for extra credit, Chairman?
Councilmember Blake always wins extra points.
Go for it.
This facility has a large regional impact. Independent School District 318 is a major tenant with over 60% non-city students. Because of its close proximity to Grand Rapids High School, it serves as the evacuation facility for the high school. The Grand Rapids Amateur Hockey Association is a major tenant with almost 65% of its members being non-city members. The facility is a county-wide emergency shelter, and the University of Minnesota estimates that 55% of the local sales and use tax would be generated by non-residents.
This isn't local sales tax.
No.
Anything further, council member?
Well, that's it for the.
But just okay.
Chair Marquardt, our total.
Yes, Mr. Pagel.
Our total project cost is just a little under $11 million. We're estimating that the approximate cost of materials, supplies, and equipment is around $5 million, and that the estimated sales and use tax would be about $340,000.
Mr. Pago, you're exactly right. The revenue estimate is $340,000 for this biennium. Thank you very much. Members, any questions for Representative Igo or for any of the testifiers? And let me ask, are there any other testifiers that are on here that would like to testify for or against House File 975? I am seeing none. So thank you, Representative Igo. Any closing comments?
Yeah, just want to say thank you again for having me, Mr. Chair. You know, the IRA is a very important pillar of my community, from high school graduations to weddings to boat shows to hockey games. It is a staple to the Northland and to Grand Rapids. So I appreciate the time to share this with you all today and hope I've earned your consideration. Thank you.
Representative Igo, thank you so much. Representative Les Legarde renews his motion to lay over House File 975 for possible inclusion into the House tax omnibus bill. Thank you all. Final bill on the agenda, House File 525, Virginia Public Facility Construction Materials Exemption. Vice Chair Les Legarde, would you like to move your bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Les Legarde moves House File 525 be laid over for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Representative Les Legarde, please
proceed. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. These are two wonderful projects. You know, the less you have, the more it means to you. And this is going to provide partial refundable sales tax exemption on materials and supplies and equipment incorporated into construction following the projects in two projects in the city of Virginia. One is the Public Safety Center and Training Facility for Fire in the Police Department. And the other one is the Miners Memorial Recreational Complex and Convention Center. And I have a dear friend of mine, Mayor Cuffey, here that will discuss that. But before I go, these projects just don't happen overnight. There was a lot of community involvement, engagement, and advocacy, and committees that came together to get both of these projects over the finish line. And you know, like I said, the less you have, the more it means to you. So anything that we could do to help these communities, and like Representative Igo just said about his convention center, we don't have a convention center in my district. This is the only one. The city of Virginia is the largest city in my district, and it is where people go. And so this project will bring a lot of economic development. It will also bring a lot of communities together. So without further ado, Mr. Chair, if I could introduce my dear friend, Mayor Cuffey, to get into details regarding these two projects.
Very good. Mayor Cuffey, welcome to the committee. If you would please identify yourself and begin your testimony, please.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you. My name is Larry Cuffey, Jr. I'm the current mayor of the city of Virginia. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Lizegard, and members of the committee for allowing me to testify before you today. We have two projects on the agenda. The first is the project that is currently being constructed, and the other that we're anticipating moving forward with construction within the next year and to 18 months. So we'll start off with the first one, and that's the Virginia Public Safety Center. Now, this is something that's been in the works for the last 10 years since I've been on the city council and then became the mayor. And the estimated project cost of this new public safety facility, which will house both police and fire and our six ALS ambulance service, which includes paramedics, EMTs, and dual role paramedics and firefighters. The total cost of this project is $20 million. And this excludes the site preparation and acquisition. That's excluded from that. So we estimate the taxable materials cost is approximately $7 million. For an estimated sales tax of about $586,600 based upon an 8.38% local sales tax rate. The major funding for this project comes from the generous allocation of $9.5 million in the bonding bill last year, and then the sale of general obligation bonds. And there's some other projects, allotments that will be going to that, but those are the major funding sources. So the construction timeline for this is going to be we just had the architectural interviews today. We expect having the layout for the facility in May to June of this year. The schematic completions will be done in the end of June, design completion in August, a final construction drawings in December, a bidding in late spring of 2022. The project should begin in the summer of 22 and hopefully completed by the fall of 2023. And the site acquisition for this cost is going to be, we're going to have to acquire about 72 properties in an area that was specifically identified in a public safety study on how our EMS and ALS services can respond within 6 minutes within our district. Now, just a reminder, we have a 600 square mile area that we cover. We provide the ALS service for other communities that don't pay. But this is a public safety building, just it's a regional facility. And this regional facility includes the Quad Cities areas of Virginia, Eveleth, Mount Lion, and Gilbert is in the Quad Cities. We are currently in negotiations and in partnership with the city of Mount Lion to consolidate our resources. This public safety will serve police, fire, ambulance, EMS personnel, and what we call a USAR team, an urban rescue team that's been developed in the North region. There were only two in the state of Minnesota. We are one of them. It would be housing that particular duty as well. And that members of that committee, or the members of that team, comes from the entire part of the region. And so it will also serve as a regional training facility as well, and serve as a critical incident command center, which we do not have currently in our facility. So that's where we're headed for in that particular area of our public safety building. And so if you like, Mr. Chair, would you like me to stop and then talk about this facility or continue on for the Miners Event and Convention Center?
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Please,
the Miners Event and Convention Center is currently under construction. It began, the total project cost of this facility is $38,118,121. The major funding sources, again, comes from the general, the generous donations, or the general allocation of $12 million in state bonding and a 1% sales tax that was approved by the legislature over a 20-year period. The taxable material cost for this project is $10,232,207.63. Taxes paid to date for construction materials is $857,459. The constructed timeline, we're currently under construction. It began in March of 2019. We are under budget and ahead of schedule by 2 to 3 weeks. We should be completing this facility by October of this year. And so what's going to happen if this is approved? And I know last year, similar legislation was drafted. It was House File 464 and Senate File 4470. It didn't because of last year's issues. We never got a hearing on that. So that's why we're late in making that a request here for the construction of the mines, which is currently under construction. So the sales tax is going to be reinvested into the projects where cuts were necessary to accommodate the budget. Examples of some are some more B3 upgrades, more than what's a minimum requirement by the state, more venue accessibility for the physically challenged and the seniors, and furniture, fixtures, and equipment to accommodate B3 and more green investment into green products as opposed to what's in the current budget now. And so I think that's basically what we're asking for is those allocations. Again, once again, to recap, $586,600 for the public safety building we're asking for, and $857,459 to date for materials cost. We don't anticipate there'll be anything more in the materials. I think the meat of that and the materials have already been expended. So I think that's an accurate assessment of what we're asking for you to consider today. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I open for any questions, and thank you for the opportunity for me to speak today.
Thank you very much, Mayor Cuffey. Anyone else care to testify that's online?
There is not.
To House File 525. All right. So the revenue estimate for House File 525 is $940,000 in this biennium and $240,000 in 2425 biennium. Members, any questions for the mayor or Representative Leslegard? See none, Representative Leslegard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. And thank you to my dear friend, Mayor Cuffey, for coming and explaining the bill. And I just would appreciate any support we can to help these small communities across the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Representative Les Lagarde renews his motion to lay over House File 525 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Members, that concludes our agenda for today. Next Tuesday, we have two bills up. We have a student loan credit bill by Representative Becker Finn. And then the main event, the always popular Department of Revenue Policy and Technical Bill. So don't miss that on Tuesday. So other than that, have a wonderful weekend. With that, members, thank you so much. We are adjourned.